Welcome to Think About It, a podcast from Houston Baptist University here in Houston, Texas. At HBU, we empower our students so their beliefs can fuel their lives. From our competitive nursing program to our world-renowned theologians, we want our students to thrive at the university level and beyond.
Dr. Robert Sloan joins us on Think About It, and he's telling us about two novels, interesting novels. Tell us their titles and the genesis of them.
Well, thank you. Good to be with you. Yes, I've now finished the second book in this series. I'm not sure how many books will be in the series. Could be four or five, but at least four. At any rate, first novel is called The Eagle, The Cave, and The Footbridge. And this is a young adult fantasy, and it is on the order of course, the kinds of books that appeal, I think, to middle grades and high school students. But of course, even adults read so-called YA or young adult fantasy. But it involves other worlds and magic and sort of supernatural events and all the things that sort of go with fantasy thriller, good guys, bad guys, that sort of thing. The Eagle, The Cave, and The Footbridge in some ways describe some of the major moments in the first volume, first book. There is an eagle who is a guide. Mm-hmm. There's a cave, which is a portal to another world. And there's a footbridge, which constitutes a test for the main character.
And you've released the second volume, so segue to that for a moment.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't want to do any plot spoilers,
right.
But the second book picks up immediately at the last moment, virtually, of the first book. The first book does have, it has some resolution, of course, every book has to, but there's also this macro plot that's going on. So while there is a successful sort of good ending with book one, there is book two really picks, there's book two picks up trying to answer a lot of the questions that are still left hanging in book one. So there's a macro plot, and book two is called the Lost Princess and the Jewel of Paraluna. Again, that represents a lot of the content or points to the content of the book. There is a princess who is lost, and our main character, whose name is Hamlin Stoop, is trying to, with the help of friends that he meets on the other side, he's trying to rescue her, and he's also trying to recover a jewel that is critical for life in an underground world. So at any rate, these fantasies go right together, and book two picks up immediately with book one.
Well, fantasy certainly speaks of imagination. I mean, how did you create all this?
You know, I think any act of creation is one of those things that all of us can do. We sometimes think we can't, but really made in the image of God means we are supposed to have some kind of, creative function in the world. Mm-hmm. The book of Genesis points to the fact that we're made in the image of God. God has just created, and so we are sub-creators. We don't create from nothing. God creates from nothing. We fashion and shape from something. But it is, as his agents in the world, there is a creative function. We've been given as stewards the world, and we're supposed to do something with it. Yeah, it was, it's something I've wanted to do really all my life. I think as a youngster, I made up stories and wrote stories, and our teachers, of course, encouraged that, but I really loved doing it. So this is something I've wanted to do really all my life, and the story has been germinating for a lot of years, really going all the way back to probably 2005. So about 12 years, the macro plot has been germinating, and then so I've just been sort of working along at it.
Now, we want people to be able to get the book so they can go to robertbsloan.com.
Yes.
Or Amazon.com, right?
Correct. There are a lot of ways to get the book, robertbsloan.com. There's also a website, Hamlin Stoop, my main character, hamlinstoop.com, or Amazon, It's and we believe we're on the cusp of getting the book placed in some of the basic bookstores.
Oh, excellent!
That people will recognize. But Amazon, that's of course the easiest way to buy anything these days.
And Hamlin is Hamelin, Stoop, Stoop, the eagle, the cave, and the footbridge. How did Hamlin Stoop come about? How old is he?
Well, the book begins with him as an infant. It's the early 1950s, and he is abandoned on the back stoop, the back porch of a children's home out in West Texas. And so the book, quite naturally, with that kind of initial setting, is about a boy searching for his identity. He wants to know who he is. He has a name, Hamlin Stoop, and how he got the name, those names is disclosed early in the book, but that's of course not his real name, and he wants to know who his parents are. He wants to know, what's his name, what's his real name, and those are the kinds of questions that human beings have been asking for a long time. I mean, it's a question of identity. Who am I? Why am I here? What am I going to do? The ancient Greeks, if you were to ask a question of identity, they would there are really three answers to the question. Who are you? One is what's your name? Mm-hmm. Who are your parents? And where are you from? So of course a lot of names that we use today are names that reflect what people do, like carpenter, or a name that has son on the end of it indicates the son of the previous, or names that have like O'Kelly, it can reflect of Kelly. So names show family, they show identity. I think it's one of the most important functions that anybody can engage in when parents are picking names for children. They really ought to pick a name that has some meaning. It can have a family connection. It can have a meaning that points to purpose or life circumstances, or maybe even aspirations for the child. So names are very important. As we know, they're important in all the great philosophies and religions of the world. What's your name? And that's what he wants to know. What's his name?
So volume one is out, and volume two on this journey of Hamlin Stoop. And you're anticipating how many more volumes?
There'll be at least four books to this series.
And so there'll be a total number of how many pages?
Oh, my goodness. Well, the first book is about 230 pages long, and same is true for the second book right now. So book three, I can tell you, will probably be double the length. It'll be as long as the first two put together.
Wow, and that'll be a single volume.
Yes. Yes.
Which will be volume three.
Yes.
And does that have a title?
Not yet. It's a working title might be something like The Battle for Parthagen. Parthagen, that's one of the cities. And it has a lot to do with, of course, picking up where book three left off, and then further adventures and the good guys fighting the bad guys. And there's a city, a kingdom that has to be retaken. The capital city is called Parthagen. So a good bit of that book has to do with that battle. But reuniting characters, families, connections between people, families that have been separated, and the attempt to restore people and learn who they are. I mean, that's basically...
So how do you think all this up?
For me, it starts with just the germ of a plot idea. I started with sort of a catchy question, which I can't disclose because it tells too much about the macro plot. But I really started with, you might say, the last chapter or the last couple chapters of the last book. Every novel, every story has a setting. It has the desire for peace. Then it's got something goes wrong, you got tension, and then you got resolution. I mean, that's what every episode, every subplot, and of course every macro plot has got to have. So, I, as a youngster, there was a storyline that's well known to people, which I won't disclose. But there's a basic storyline that that did, for me as a kid, did not have a happy ending.
Mm.
And so I wanted to know, you know, sort of, you know, what else is happening here? What happened to those characters? It's an old myth. And so in trying to write that, I said, well, here's something that could have happened to them. And so what happens is then when the germ of the idea starts, then there are characters. And then it starts to take off from there. But I mean, the same structure, you have to have tension. Everywhere mm-hmm. you go, you have to have tension. The characters, it was a little easier for me to do the characters because I used, and this is sort of cheating, I guess, but many of the characters have family names in our family. And so I started off just as sort of an amusing tactic. I wanted my grandchildren to have something, a story to read that I thought that I would want children to read, teenagers and so on. So I used the names of their parents. My children, Sue and I have seven children. So I used a lot of our children's names, and then I started using other family names and mixing them up because, I mean, the characters bear the names of our seven children, but the characters, but they're different. Even the birth order is different, and I obviously changed things around. But it gave me a starting point in my head. I thought, okay, I know what somebody by the name of, say, Brian, I know what he's like. There's a character named Brian in the book. And there's a character in the first book named, a girl named Layla. And so so we have children by those names. And so it gave me a start on personalities. But of course, you know, they're not exact representations. But you develop the characters and so on from there. So that sort of helped me get a handle on characters.
We're talking with Dr. Robert Sloan, the president of Houston Baptist University, about his recently published two young adult fiction novels, Hamlin Stoop, The Eagle, The Cave, and The Footbridge, and Hamlin Stoop, The Lost Princess, and The Jewel of Perluna.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and those are available at robertbsloan.com. We want to encourage people to get those, or at amazon.com. There's spiritual metaphors all throughout this, and the imagination of a young person and an adult. As I look at these books, I don't really see they have to be restricted to young people. Do you?
No, not at all. In fact, I can say that the young adult market is one that's probably frequented more by adults, maybe even than young adults. Now, certainly young adults pick these books up first because they want things to read. So they'll find characters that are about their age, storylines that fit their situation and setting in life. But then when kids start reading something, then usually, some parents will say, well, I guess I need to read that to see if it's okay. Others just, the word of mouth, it's just a popular book. And so in the long run, so-called children's books or young adult fiction or fantasy is read more by adults in the marketplace than probably teenagers or so-called young adults. It just happens that way because a story is a story. And young adult fantasy is thought of, fantasy is sometimes thought of as a children's genre because it's got fairy tales and it's only, but really human beings have always told fairy tales. C.S. Lewis and Tolkien both talk about this in some essays Lewis, I think, refers to the furniture of the nursery, and that when the child gets older, we leave the furniture of the nursery aside. But the fact is that it's the fantasy is again, it's just the furniture. Everybody still needs furniture. It may be a little bigger, maybe a little different, but everybody still needs furniture. Fantasy is widely read, of course, by adults. Now, the adult version of fantasy is typically called science fiction, and of course, great science fiction writers. But the modern day version for a lot of young people of fantasy is superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
So the classic fantasy you know, you get the books by George MacDonald, say, that's a classic fantasy. And then, of course, the books of Tolkien or Lewis or William Morris. I mentioned George MacDonald. So these are classic sort of fantasy. But really, you know, it's even in our modern era, we still get classic fantasy, but now we get new versions of it. And then science fiction is, as I say, is just another type of fantasy.
Can you speak for a moment, just as we kind of come to the wrap up, about the spiritual metaphors that are running through the book? I mean, we don't want to spoil the plot, but you're a theologian and you obviously are a New Testament scholar. So what kind of metaphors are there?
You know, all of us, I think, right out of our own experience, our own knowledge base, I have tried to write the kinds of books that I wanted to read myself, and that I wanted my own children, grandchildren to read. But, you know, the one rule of thumb, and Lewis and Tolkien both talk about this, is write the kind of books that you want to read. Mm. So I've done that. But authors do this. You do tend to write in some ways out of your experience. You don't have to have had that experience, but you have to have had some kind of experience that makes that at least plausible to you. So, I mean, yes, I'm a New Testament theologian. That's my academic discipline. I've written books, articles, on New Testament and biblical themes. So I couldn't help but use the metaphorical, symbolic language that I do know well out of the Christian scriptures. So, you know, there are a lot of symbols that are common to all literature, like light and darkness. Mm-hmm. Those are common metaphors. But also, I use water quite a bit. I use the idea of reflection and image, and the animals that are in these books are they're not just. I'll just say this without giving anything away. They're not haphazardly chosen. Hmm. All of the animals, every single animal, has a specific reason for that animal being chosen, and it comes out of the life of the metaphors I know. Life, death, courage, testing. I think life is a test. Mm-hmm. I think that's just sort of writ large in the fabric of the universe. Whatever your belief system may be, in virtually all belief systems, still, I think all of us intuitively realize that we are being put to the test for something. We're being challenged. We're being forced to ask questions. The ability to ask questions implies that there's something we don't know, and so there's a challenge and thus a test of some sort that's going on. And that's what these books are. The idea of course, the metaphor of a journey. I mean, that's of course, you know, older than the writings of Homer. You know, it's as old as the Iliad and the Odyssey, and older than that. It's just, it's human mm-hmm. to think about journeys and tests and mysteries and life itself. I think within the fabric of every human being is this desire, this longing for resolution, this sense that something's wrong and yet we know it could be put right, and we long for that. Mm-hmm. So those are, I think, the big themes and the big issues that cut across the plots and the characters and the books.
Well, they are quite a journey for everyone to enjoy, and we want to encourage everybody to get both Hamlin Stoop, The Eagle, The Cave, and The Footbridge, and Hamlin Stoop, The Lost Princess, and The Jewel of Perluna, authored by the president of Houston Baptist University, Dr. Robert Sloan.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for coming by.
Absolutely. Great to be with you.
And just a word about all the exciting things at the university and how you feel about how things are moving forward.
I've never been more excited than I am this very day about the state of HBU, but more than the state of HBU, it's the direction and the flourishing and the future. I've now been here over a decade, and have enjoyed every moment of it, even though there have been a lot of challenges. I mean, everything from, you know, financial crises in the macro economy,
right,
to hurricanes and those kinds of things, those kinds of issues. But I'll tell you, we have so much going on. The university is prospering at every level. Outstanding faculty and staff is probably the place to start. When you have programs that attract young people, when you have world-class scholars who care about young people and are great teachers, staff that care about young people. Of course, the university embraces enthusiastically a Christian worldview, and that's who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a different kind of education. It's not just, okay, well, college is the next thing. Let's just go take a few classes here and there. No, we actually have a sense of purpose, a sense of identity about who we are as a university. And we have outstanding people here. So young people who come to us, they're not sort of lost in the shuffle. They are taken into a community. They're taken into a family. They're taken into a place that knows where we know who we are, and we care about students. So the whole atmosphere of support, love, nourishment, encouraging. And then a beautiful campus. I mean, our campus was recently rated in one regional study within the top, I think number three in one of the regional studies of the most beautiful college campuses in the West. And then in another study, we were well within the top 25 nationwide for Christian colleges and universities in terms of the beauty of the campus. So it's a great setting. We're in a great city, as our name Houston Baptist implies. This is now the third largest city in America. I mean, the arts that are here, the industry, medicine, the ship channel, the economy, the dynamism, the international flavor, the demographics of this city, the diversity of this city, the cultural richness, it's unbelievable. And so here we are, at HBU. So all those things. And then, of course, there's, again, certain academic programs with the Center for Law and Liberty. I mean, great questions are going on today about the nature of constitutionalism, mm-hmm, in our country and in our world, about the nature of liberty, about the nature of law and government. Well, we have a Center for Law and Liberty here that addresses head on these foundational, fundamental questions of free speech and liberty, religious freedom. Those are at the forefront of our cultural struggles and questions today. So great curriculum. We have a program in, traditionally called apologetics. Of course, that doesn't mean apologizing. It means thinking about the Christian faith and how to articulate it, how to, mm-hmm, defend it, how to express it and integrate it in all of life. So great disciplines, a wonderful honors college, nursing. We're well known for a great school of nursing. Education, we have a doctoral program now in the College of Education, and more doctoral programs to come. So we are a comprehensive university. And College of Business, the Archie W. Dunham College of Business is really gathering some reputation to itself. So a lot's going on, and I didn't even talk about athletics. we play Division I athletics.
17 different.
Exactly, 17 different varsity sports in Division I athletics. So men and women, of course, and quite successful, and it's all very exciting. So
well, we do want you to come back from time to time and just give us the president's update on all the exciting things that are happening at HBU and the vision God gives you. And let's close by reminding everyone the two adult fiction volumes, young adult fiction volumes of Dr. Robert Sloan, Hamlin Stoop, The Eagle, The Cave, and The Footbridge, Hamlin Stoop, The Lost Princess, and The Jewel of Perluna are now available at Amazon.com or RobertBSloan.com. We want to get those books and we want to use them.
Thank you
for writing them.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for inviting me today.
At HBU, we influence the culture around us by challenging our students to put their beliefs into action every day.